This is Scorebook Live Today, a podcast about high school sports in the state of Washington. I'm Andy Bueller, Scorebook Live reporter. Senior reporter Todd Millis is with me here, and SB Live analyst, former NBA player, college basketball All-American Dan Dickow is on the line from San Diego. How you guys doing today?
I think I'm doing better than you guys, simply for the fact that I know there's a cold snap coming through the state of Washington, in particular the east side. I'm in San Diego to call a Gonzaga game tonight on a broadcast, but hopefully you guys are okay with the snow, and hopefully it doesn't impact too many games over the next few days.
Yeah, as Dan mentioned, Andy and I are we've taken a trip east to look at some teams, to get to see some teams and players we don't normally get to see. Right now we're in the Tri-Cities. I have a chance to see Chihuahua this week, and it sounds like that snowstorm that Dan alluded to is going to possibly hit on Friday, right about the time that the Chihuahua and Kennewick doubleheader, girls-boys doubleheader in the Mid-Columbia Conference, two big games over here that Annie and I get a chance to see. So just pray for us, Dan, okay?
Sounds good.
Yeah, really excited to bring you guys some of the stories that Todd and I have been working on here, you know, yesterday being in the Yakima Valley, and then these next couple days in Pasco, in addition to covering that doubleheader as we record this tomorrow, Friday. But now we're going to talk about the WIA's newly released RPI for boys and girls basketball. What does it mean? What is the RPI? Why is it important? And what implications does it have on the season? So first off, just to start, the first rankings came out in the new year, just a little bit under half of the season underway. Todd, do you want to talk a little bit about kind of what goes into this RPI ranking and some of the implications that that hangs on it when it comes to the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, the formula is pretty basic. It's 40% of your own winning percentage. It's 40% of your opponent's winning percentage. And the 20%, the remaining 20% is your opponent's winning percentage. And now, let's make something clear. That's all in-state games. Now, when this RPI started, the out-of-state factor was pretty much negligent in this formula. Now, these teams that go, and there are a lot of teams around the state that go play in out-of-state tournaments, especially over the holiday break. It's kind of up to them to kind of input manually, you know, what those teams, the teams that they played out-of-state, what their records are throughout the year and their opponents' records and whatnot. So that element is now present, but by and large, it's mainly an in-state gauge of, you know, basically strength of schedule and how your team's doing, and they basically rank these teams. You can get these things updated on a nightly basis after games are done, and then obviously it's big because when you're in when you're in the top 12. You get, or you're at top 8, top 12. You're pretty much guaranteed a spot in the regional playoffs. This thing runs through the district round, and then once that's determined, that determines the round of 16, the regional round, and sort of how everybody's ranked and sort of. Pits those matchups based on your seeding. So it's a pretty big deal. It's something that the WIA adopted a few years ago. I look at some of these RPI rankings, and I know we're going to kind of get into it. You know, again, it's only early January, but there's some teams up there that are ranked pretty high in the RPI that I think, you know, you'd scratch your head at. What do you think about some of the RPI stuff that you see in the boys' side?
Well, quickly before we get to that, and I appreciate your breakdown. Some of the computers at this point of the season, due to some of the reasons you just laid out, Todd, are just going to be a little bit skewed. And right now on scorebooklive.com/Washington, we've got some different polls going up. Dan, you work on the boys basketball coaches poll every week. that has coaches that are watching these games, that are coaching these games, that know the sport, know the landscape, voting on who the top teams are from around the state. We do those by classification, and then Dan and I put our heads together and put an all classification top 25. That's more of a thought exercise than it does kind of hang on any sort of postseason implications. Just because, you know, we're comparing 1A teams to 4A teams and teams that will never play each other in the postseason or the non-league. So we have some kind of answers to those at this point of the season on Scorebook Live. We'll run those throughout the season. But jumping into the RPI, which actually, decides things in the postseason, at the 4A, I'm just going to run through the top 10 real quick, and then we'll talk about some of the teams that that we've seen. Union at number 1, Glacier Peak 2, Federal Way 3, Central Valley 4, Skyview 5, Chiawana 6, Redmond 7, and then Mariner, Sumner, and Mount Si. So at the 4A level, just jumping into it, I think Union at number 1, sitting undefeated at 13-0, that's who we have number 1 in our coaches poll. We have number 2 in our all-class top 25. Nailed it. They haven't lost a game. The computers, that works really well in the computer rankings. And they're certainly, in many regards, the best 4A team in the state. Glacier Peak, sitting there at number 2 at 10-0. Undefeated, but it's not reflective of what the coaches have voted on at this point. Mount Si is at 10 in the RPI. Coaches poll has them ranked at number 2. They're the defending runners up at the 4A level, and Mount Si should probably be higher than 10 at this point. I think Chiawana should probably be higher than 6. Skyview at 5 is a little high, although they have a really good win over Federal Way at this point. And Central Valley, a team that just picked up a really impressive win over Mount Spokane on Tuesday that Dan was at, them being at 4 for me is a bit, it's honestly, at this point of the season with their body of work, it makes sense. Dan, what do you think? You saw Central Valley. Is there anything in the top 10 at the 4A level that kind of stands out to you as glaringly either true or untrue?
Well, I think there's a couple things that stand out to me is, you know, Union, you expect them to be there. You expect Federal Way to be up towards the top. Skyview, outside of, the early preseason loss to Evergreen, who's been an upstart in the 3A, that I'm okay with that. Chiawana being undefeated. Sumner and Mount Si at 9-10 are the interesting ones to me. And the reason why is, you know, Mount Si, they're very good. They've got a number of losses, but they're playing really well now. Sumner is putting together a really nice season. They might be in the most difficult 4A league in the state, although, you know, if you say that to someone in the GSHL down south in Vancouver, they'll kind of try to steer you in their direction. And I think both leagues and their coaches have valid points when they discuss that. I did see Central Valley. I like their pieces, but I do think they're a little high at 4. I think the 4A level on the east side of the state in particular, the GSL, isn't quite what it has been in years past. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, Gonzaga Prep being the traditional power, not being dominant this year. But I don't want to take anything away from Central Valley, because I did go to the game against Mount Spokane. They had a great game plan to limit Tyson Degenhart's touches. They played a little bit of box and one, skewed it a little bit, occasionally went with a little triangle and two. And after seeing them in person again, I was impressed with Jay Simmons, their point guard. He was the one who controlled that game. He got him off to a great start early, just setting the tempo, the pace. Knocked down an early three, which isn't necessarily his strong suit, but when he does that, it changes the complexion of how you have to guard Central Valley. So those are the biggest kind of, teams that I look for that may be a bit out of place, maybe Olympia as well. But again, they're 7-2 and they're at number 15. It kind of makes you kind of curious about, you know, are all the scores inputted from schools that maybe have played out of area teams? Because I know there's a little bit of that goes into the calculations.
Sure. And strength of schedule, it plays a factor, obviously, as Todd outlined. But the teams that are sitting undefeated or have sitting now at, you know, I look at Mariner at 9-1, look at Auburn Riverside at 10-1. There's some teams that may have not seen the hardest part of their schedule yet that have, you know, but maybe benefited in the rankings. Redmond at 9-2 that may be benefited by the RPI at this moment, might not be there later in the season. We'll see if they prove it. The 4A, that kind of wraps that up for the boys, but I want to talk about the 3A, because the 3A currently in our all-class top 25 right now has the three of the top four teams in the state. That's Eastside Catholic, O'Day, Garfield. Garfield and O'Day played on Tuesday, and a lot of those teams have really gone out of their way to challenge themselves at this point of the season, whether through holiday tournaments and whatnot. I'm just going to run through the 3A top 10, and we can kind of parse this through because it's a little bit of a mess. Wilson at number 1 at 9-2, Gig Harbor at number 2 at 10-1, Mount Spokane at 3 at 10-2, Evergreen of Vancouver 9-2, they're at 4. Eastside Catholic at 10-1 is at 5. Kamiakin at 6 with 2 losses. Stanwood at 7 with 2 losses. Seattle Prep at 8 with 2 losses. And a 2-loss Mount Tahoma team at 9. And O'Day sitting there at number 10 at 2 losses. Now, we'll start with you, Todd. What do you make of this top 10? And is it reflective of the landscape of 3A right now?
Well, no. I mean, I love Mike O'Kay. He's won a state championship at Foss a few years back. He's a fantastic coach. He's got a good team at Wilson, but they're, you know, the RPI and the rankings, this is where it doesn't really match up. To have Eastside Catholic go down to the Les Schwab and finish as the runner-up against some really good teams, not lose to anybody in state and be the fifth-ranked team in the Metro, or from the Metro at number 5, it is... Yeah, they should be starting at 1, and then you can throw O'Day going in and playing some pretty good tournaments. There are some teams at the City of Palms. They just beat Garfield. I watched them beat Rainier Beach last Friday. They're playing some really good ball after that 1-2 showing at the City of Palms. To me, those are clearly the two teams to beat in the state of Washington right now. But that's not what the RPI shows. And like Andy said, some of these teams have won a lot of games, maybe picked up an upset or two that we haven't paid a whole lot of attention to. I know Gig Harbor is off to a nice start, beat a really good Linden team in the first game of the year. I'm sure that's helped their RPI. So, again, not that these teams that are at the top are bad. I just think... when you look at Eastside Catholic 5, you look at O'Day 10, and you look at Garfield at 13, and you just sort of shake your head and go, that's got to change. And when they start playing one another, I'm sure that will change because of the strength of the schedule of the Metro League and the fact that they just sort of beat up on one another.
Dan, if you're a fan of one of these teams that we've talked about that is that may be underrated according to the RPI at this point of the season, if you're a coach, what would you tell them? At this point of the year, if they, you know, go to the WI's website and see, you know, if they're an O'Day fan and they go to the WI's website and they see, hey, here's this system that actually has bearings on our postseason rankings, and why are we ranked at 10? This doesn't make any sense.
I tell them to chill out. There's a ton of basketball left to be played. You know, but here's the thing, though, is if you've got, you know, fans or parents that are kind of interested in it at this point of the year, that's great for your program. That means they're engaged, they're involved, and they're interested. But again, there is so much basketball left to be played. Most leagues are just now starting to get into the meat of your league play. And in all honesty, league play is where you differentiate yourself and allow yourself to make the playoffs. So it really doesn't matter what your record stands at this point of the season, because you got to continue to win basketball games, and to do that, you've got to improve throughout the course of the year. You know, because, for example, What if you've had an injury and you have dropped a game or two, but now you're starting to show signs of improvement and you're getting on the same page and you're about to run off a number of wins? You know, again, I think the RPI is one of those tools that is great to use as one of the tools to rank teams. You know, the hard thing is, though, is the WIA is using it for a lot of the seeding, or most of the seeding, if I'm not mistaken. And so I believe there will be some tweaks over the course of how the RPI is built out over the next few years to make sure this continues to be as correct as possible. But I don't think you can ever get rankings through a computer to be correct. When, you know, Todd mentioned Eastside Catholic being ranked where they're at, or O'Day being where they're at, I mean, come on now. Paulo Banchero, I watched a bunch of highlights of him over the weekend, and there might not be a better player in the junior class in the entire country, and then they've got some other pieces around him. You cannot tell me that, I think, what is it, they're the 10th team in the state at the, 10th team in the state at the 3A level. That just makes no sense.
Right, and jumping off on your point about Paulo, I was at Garfield O'Day on Tuesday. We'll talk a little bit about that and some games that we've seen in a moment. But before that, the RPI on the girls' side. Let's kind of go into 4A, 3A. Todd, is there anything that stands out on the girls' side, just parsing through those RPI rankings? And do you feel like they're reflective of the true rankings across the state? The ones that you run on Scorebook Live every week?
Yeah, you know, Freddie, Recco, and I, we talk a lot about the state landscape before we do our rankings, and also a lot of coaches. And quite frankly, outside the fact that the Garfield girls are ranked 17th in 3A, I don't know what it is about the 3A RPI, you guys. It seems a little out of whack. But, you know, you look at Woodinville girls, one. We have them ranked number one in our Scorebook Live 4A rankings. Lyndon Ellensburg is the 1-2 in our rankings. They're 1-2 in the RPI. Kashmir, Lyndon Christian in 1A. Haley Van Lith at Kashmir. They're 1-2 in the RPI. They're 1-2 in our rankings as well. We have Lynn Ritzville at number one in our 2B rankings. The RPI has Mossy Rock. I can understand that. The good young team that's undefeated. And then Pomeroy and 1B, same. We both have the same number one. So you look at that. That's 1, 2, 3, 4 of our number one teams in our rankings at Scorebook Live are the same as the RPI. So honestly, it's a little more reflective and consistent in both polls, in both sets of rankings, than maybe the boys.
Certainly. So stay tuned to the RPI. If you're a fan across the state, I would encourage you to look at all the rankings, look at the other computers, ScoreZar, Matt Evans rankings. They're constantly updating in addition to the WI's RPI rankings. And of course, our rankings, coaches' polls on the boys' side at scorebooklive.com/Washington, in addition to our all-class top 25. But moving on, we have been to some great games, and there's been some fantastic games across the state this week. I'm going to start on Tuesday. I went to O'Day High School, right off the freeway downtown Seattle, saw them take on Garfield, two of the most talented teams in the state, two teams that are in our top four, in all-class top 25, and will be likely throughout the season. O'Day glides to a 20-point win over Garfield. Paolo Banchero was more than impressive. 24 points, 11 boards, and a little bit of everything else. The best front court that he faces this season in state, in Tari Eason, Cincinnati commit, and Kendall Munson, a Pepperdine commit. Something that was really impressive first about that game, before I get into some of the X's and O's, is that, Todd, you were at Rainier Beach. You were at Rainier Beach last week for Rainier Beach Garfield. And
Rainier Beach O'Day.
Sorry, Rainier Beach O'Day. Mm-hmm. And you showed up really early to even get in that gym. And I asked you, I called Monty Kohler, the AD at Garfield. I said, how in the world am I going to get into this gym? And the advice I came away with is show up literally at the freshman game. they're going to have a freshman JV game before the varsity game, and you got to show up that early. And that's what I did. I showed up at about 4:30, 4:45-ish, and it was already full. The freshman game, the student sections were full. The freshman game, I tweeted this out, was the loudest game, the loudest high school basketball atmosphere that I have experienced so far this season. The freshman game of O'Day Garfield. I mean, it was just such a great environment. It's a tiny gym. It's a middle school sized gym. And they pack it in. And they shut the gate at O'Day like an hour and a half before the game started. Nobody else was allowed in. So, I mean, it was standing room atmosphere, and it was – the billing lived up to the hype. You have Paolo Banchero, one of the top juniors in the entire country, was unfazed by either of the other opposing big men. He was awesome. He was hitting threes. He was scoring in a lot of different ways. He had two blocks that he misdirected into the wall that had people going nuts. It was just a great high school basketball atmosphere, and I think it solidified O'Day as the top 3A team in the state and likely the top team across the board in the state. So O'Day Garfield, would love to see them play again at some point in the season. I'm sure, and I wrote about this in my three observations, maybe Garfield would approach defending Paolo a little bit differently. Paolo said it's the first time all year that he hasn't been double teamed, which he took as them being overconfident that they could guard him, and he made him pay. So great game, O'Day Garfield. I expect Garfield to be there at the end of the season. Just a fantastic high school basketball game. Dan, you talked a little bit about Mount Spokane CV. Is there anything else in that game? Two teams with the hottest start in the Greater St. Helens League faced off early in league play.
Yeah, after watching the game, I had a chance to talk with Coach Mike Laws of Central Valley. And we had talked a little bit over the fall in the fact that he really liked his ball club. I'll just be honest with you, I was a little bit hesitant, because they struggled a lot last year. And off camera before the interview, he said, "Hey, look, I believe in our team. We've got a pretty balanced team. We've got a pretty, experienced team, and it's led by Jay Simmons, who played very well that night." You know, I think Mike Laws is a coach that, you know, in years past, my understanding is the previous coach, Rick Sloan, you were going to play man and man only. And Mike Laws is willing to change it up at times if it's needed. Man's his base defense. But, you know, they realized that they didn't have a big that could kind of be quick enough and stay in front of Degenhardt. So they changed things up, made life difficult on him. And then, as I mentioned, Jay Simmons played very well. Seemed to make all the right plays down the stretch. And in particular, I think the last play of the game that really sealed the deal before two free throws with a second or so left to get the final score was Mount Spokane had a sideline out of bounds right near half court. And David Wagenblass of Mount Spokane drew up a great play for Degenhardt, kind of in a misdirection to get isolated on the wing. And it looked like he was coming open, and then Jay Simmons sniffed it out, and at the last second he was able to jump out and deny it and get in front. And so Mount Spokane had to try to quickly go to a different direction, and they ended up throwing the ball over for turnover. Two free throws ensued for the final score. But Jay Simmons, after seeing him again in person, I was sold the other day.
Those highlights produced by video producer at Scorebook Live, Gray Reed, are up on the site, scorebooklive.com/Washington. Seemed like a great game. I was following along live on the Scorebook Live app, and it was really fun to hit refresh and watch Central Valley's early lead slowly dwindle away in the second half.
Yeah, you know, you're lucky because sorry to interrupt you there, Todd. You're lucky because the gym at Mount Spokane might have the worst reception in the Spokane area to follow games. So I kept hitting refresh, and I couldn't get it. And it was not due to the app. It was due to the Wi-Fi in the gym. But I finally got it going towards the fourth quarter and was able to follow who was playing well. But glad to hear that you guys were following it there. They had over, I want to say, about 300 people following the game at one point during the game, which is, you know, pretty good. If you can imagine multiplying that out over the course of the state, just how many people have the ability to follow games across the state when schools are using the scoring app. It's pretty impressive.
You know, I did get to see Rainier Beach, and we haven't talked a whole lot about Rainier Beach. We know that this is a team that I think we all expected to kind of take a step back in the Metro League. It was interesting to see them play O'Day that last Friday of the Christmas the holiday break, and you know, Mike Bethea's frustrated. I mean, he's frustrated with how slow this team has come together. You know, John Hart was basically the one guy that returned that saw regular time last year in a team that went to the 3A state semifinals, losing to Mount Spokane. So he's trying to get these new pieces to play together, and they still have a lot of talent. I mean, John Hart's a very talented wing. He talked about, you know, Hamza Mohaba, who's been probably their most consistent player. He's averaging about 18 points a game. He can really shoot it, especially from deep. Their point guard is a guy I was really impressed with. Keyshawn Atkins also can score the basketball. But, you know, they don't have an established big guy. Josh Connerly, the big football recruit in the class of 2022, is basically their inside, their post presence, and guarded or started out that game guarding Paulo Banchero before getting in a little bit of foul trouble, and then they went a different direction. They went a little small. You know, LJ Armstrong played, saw a lot of time, but they're playing a lot of zone. You know, stuff that I didn't think that I would see with Rainier Beach under Mike. They're trying to slow it down. I know they can't, run with an Eastside Catholic. They can't even run with O'Day. And a lot of it is their transition defense. They just don't get guys back. It's been a frustrating start for Mike trying to get this piece together with so many young guys. John Hart and Hamza Mohaba are both seniors, but you look at their roster, they're pretty much juniors down, and with probably their two most talented players. You know, I got to watch Nate Robinson's son play, Namir Robinson. He's a freshman point guard. He comes off the bench. And then Terrence Williams' son plays there, Ziggy Holmes Williams. He's a sophomore wing. Not ready to be high-impact players at this time, but you can see why Mike likes these guys moving forward. It's going to be interesting to see the adjustments they make from January until the playoffs. I think, you know, Mike's okay with them kind of being the third or fourth team coming out of the Metro League as long as they start playing better, more together come playoff time, and maybe, you know, get on a run. I don't think Mike entertains the thought that this is a team that's going to contend for a state championship, but they're certainly fun to watch, but they need to play better, especially on defense. Too many easy buckets for Paulo and company that night in one of the worst losses Mike's ever taken in the Metro League.
Todd, I appreciate your insight there, and I'm going to continue to put you on the spot. Lake Stevens Glacier Peak on the girls' side faced off on Saturday. What did you make of that game? A highly ranked billing between two of the top girls programs across the state.
Now, I know these two girls teams probably don't run like the Metro League, but it's pretty close when you have two point guards that can run up and down the floor like Aaliyah Collins at Glacier Peak. You know, you got someone like an off guard like Reagan Reed, who does play some point guard from Lake Stevens going to Boise State. But it's interesting when you see, and Dan can probably talk to this a little bit, two teams that are accustomed to playing up-tempo, that like to press, when they start playing each other, it's interesting to see which team sort of puts its will on the other and makes the other make mistakes. And on the night that I watched them, Lake Stevens, for 2.5 quarters, led that game. Played well, played efficient, got stuff in the transition. They have some bigger pieces in their front court. And then all of a sudden, in about 4.5 minutes, Glacier Peak really turned up the heat on the press, getting up, forcing a lot of turnovers, getting a lot of transition baskets, 15-0 run, and it was sort of boom, game was over. Very impressed with Glacier Peak and their pieces. They were kind of the favorite going into the 4A Wesco preseason. This was sort of their top threat, and to go on the road and beat them by 14 points was pretty impressive. This is a team that's going to be a handful to moving forward, not only in just in the Wesco, but in that very difficult Kinko Wesco district and at the state level as well.
Certainly. I know it's basketball season, but the football news cycle seems to find its way onto our site and into the consciousness. This week, legendary football coach Chiawana and Pasco, previously Steve Graff, announced his retirement from the sidelines after 23 years as a head coach, 37 years total, four state championships, two runners-up, and just a ton of league championships. One of the great coaches in Washington State history will go down. He's already in the Hall of Fame. We sat down with him earlier today, and we will play his interview after a quick break. So for Scorebook Live, this has been Andy Buehler, Todd Millis, and Dan Dickow. Stick with us.
Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
Andy Buehler with Scorebook Live here with Chiawana head coach Steve Graff, retiring after 23 years. As a head coach, 37 years total. Is that right, Coach?
That's about right, somewhere in there, 36, 37.
As you reflect on how long it's been, I mean, what led you to finally understand that it was time?
Well, I'm getting old, overweight, too much stress for, you know, it was just time. I've been doing it a long time. I had thoughts of, you know, especially this fall when it was nice outside there, I could be in a boat fishing or down in a tree stand hunting. So yeah, I think it was time.
Four state championships, two runners up, a lot of league titles, and most recently this year, obviously coming off a league title. Was a part of it just kind of being happy with where the program was at now and understanding kind of what there was to build off of going forward?
Yeah, you always want to go out on top, and you know you don't want to be fired. People have said a long time, you know, there's two kinds of coaches, those that have been fired, you know, and those that go out on their own terms. I thought it was time. We had a good season. We had a good group of kids. Had some things that affected our run in the playoffs, but yeah. I thought we did well.
You were the first and only head coach at this school. What did that mean to you? And just kind of taking a step back into when Chiawana opened, walk me through kind of the decision to come over here and you know, the promise of what could be built here at Chiawana.
Well, first of all, I live in these boundaries, so my kids were going to come here. And so that was the biggest thing, be able to coach my own kids and have a chair that at my desk that has – four round wheels instead of three round wheels and one square one. So going to get new equipment, all new stuff, it's a great opportunity to start a new program.
You started at Pasco in 97 and 98, you guys won a state championship. What was that season like? What are some of the things you remember?
Yeah, well, the first season we lost to Central Valley. We missed a field goal. I can't remember if it was a quarterfinal game or I think it was a quarterfinal game. And I actually thought we were better that year than we were in 98. And, you know, the kids in 98 just, you know, gobbled it up and did a great job and got over there. And it was pretty cool, that first one. Pretty cool.
What do you remember about being on that stage?
Well, I had some really good assistants, too. You know, back then I was a little bit more involved. I was a defensive coordinator then. I fired myself here a couple of years ago, a defensive coordinator, after Gonzaga Prep put 600 on the ground on us or something like that. So, but I had good coaches. We had great camaraderie, good kids. And, you know, that's what you play for, is to get to the Dome. Before it was the King Dome, you know. Coach Spray, who I coached with at Dayton, he went there, and what was it, 92, I think. And I went over and sat in the box for him, and that's a pretty cool deal.
Over so many years, I would imagine a lot of it blends together. Is there a best game, best comeback, playoff win, any particular game or moment where the odds were stacked against you that stands out that you'll never forget?
Well, that'd be the Camas game, you know, when they went for it on fourth down, and everybody in the yard knew who the ball was going to, and so we get it to stop, you know. Well, now we got to go score. And then how this, you know, our receiver gets behind a guy, Dre got behind him and scored, and it's like, wow, that's pretty cool. And then we got this little sophomore kicker who hasn't done an onside kick all year, kicks it perfectly, and we get it. And then the next thing that happened, the poor kid on the Camas team had a club on his hand. Our quarterback threw it right to him. It went off him and landed in our guy's hands. Well, we're supposed to win this. We might as well just go ahead and down here and score and win this thing. That was pretty, pretty cool. The 2000 team was probably the best group of guys that I've ever coached. I mean, as a whole group, they worked hard. They were tough. And I think they went 14-0 and won that one. And pretty handily, I think, in the championship game. Some of the other playoff games, I remember we played Bethel over here in a semifinal game, and they had a kid that I think ended up going to USC, and they kept fumbling the ball on the 20-yard line, and we get the end final score is like 70-28. But I didn't feel safe with 70, because anytime that guy touched the ball, he had 28. We had 70, he had 28. And we kicked the ball off and kicked it right to him. Well, he went down and got another one. I've never felt safe with a 40-point lead, and, you know, and scoring 70 points. Because, you know, you get guys like that, that one sticks in my mind.
Fall Friday nights going forward, will we see you on the football field or somewhere around the team, or do you plan to take a step back?
Well, some of the games I'll come to. I'll have to come, you know, be at the Richland game. I'll go over on the Richland sideline and stand with Nyholt and see how, you know, bother him. But, yeah, I'll be at some games. But in September, Fridays is a good night to be in a tree stand, too. That entered my mind a lot more this fall than it ever has. So, and that helped with the decision. And you know, I have – coaches, we go on fishing trips and stuff. We've gone on fishing trips in the summertime as a group, and those were always a pretty good time. And, you know, there's guys on staff I've hunted with for years. And so I just, you know, Spray's up there. He retired a couple years ago. He's up on the mountain right now. So one of these days I'll be able to get up there all the time.
You announced, at least publicly, on Tuesday. The past few days, what's been the outpouring of feedback and support been like from you, from, you know, former players, coaches, and members of the community?
Well, you know, the community's always been great, and you know, they really, really stepped up to the plate when Matt got hurt and did a whole bunch of stuff to our house that, you know, we didn't have anything to do with. Community's always been great, but again, it's you win football games and you win state championships, and people get behind you and support you. And even when we were 6-4, the 6-4 years, you know, they knew it would be better next year. So yeah, we've always had good community support. We've always had great assistance, and that makes it easy for me.
Well, Coach, I appreciate your time and wish you the best in coaching retirement.
Thanks.